Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting since 2005, you're listening to Gamertag Radio with your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Welcome to a brand new episode of Gamer Tag Radio, and this time I have a special guest with Malik Fortabe. For those that don't know, he's the host at Overwatch League. You can watch it on Twitch or Disney XD and other platforms. But shout out to Malik, man. We had a great conversation about how was it, him at first before he started getting into the whole gaming industry and everything. So we had a long conversation. So I hope everybody likes this, and please share it. Let me know what you think. All right, so before we go to my interview with Malik, make sure to continue to donate because, we're trying to go to E3, and we're going to have some details, some update very soon about the donations overall for the past almost, 2 months or so. We're definitely going to be talking about that on a future episode of Gamertag Radio. But I definitely want to say that thank you to all the listeners worldwide have been supporting us and also sending donations. That's going to help us out so much beyond E3. Right now we're focusing at E3 because that's a very important event for us to cover. So yeah, continue to donate. Just go to donate.gamertagradio.com. That's donate.gamertagradio.com. All right, so here's my interview with Malik.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right, so we have a special guest here. You want to like to present yourself, man?
Sure. Yeah, I got you. I got you, man. My name is Malik Forte. I am a master of nothing, an international nobody, but in my spare time, I'm a music producer who works in esports.
Oh, awesome. I didn't know you were a music producer.
You didn't know that?
I didn't know that.
It's like my main job, bro.
Really?
Yeah.
I have my cousins, they're also producers too, man, and I have friends. Yeah, because I used to be involved in the music industry back in the 90s.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, so you've always had opinions about music publicly.
Yes.
So I knew you were in the realm somehow, but now it makes sense.
Now you know what's up.
That's what's up, though.
So Malik, let's go back. First of all, thank you for taking your time for us to record here, man.
Of course, man. I've been wanting to do this for a minute.
For a very long time.
I've known about Gamertag Radio since I was a plebeian in this gaming industry.
You know what? I that's my first question. I would like to ask you, man, how you heard about GTR, man? Because that's how we started seeing each other at events and all this stuff, So how do you know about GTR, man?
It's just, I was an indie journalist for a while, I always looked around at who else was doing kind of the guerrilla style work that I was doing, and, seeing who was, innovating and who was kind of on the cutting edge. And so, there was DLB Network. He was kind of DLB had this PlayStation podcast that was very popular, way back in the day. And on the flip side of the coin, I was like, well, who's kind of running the game when it comes to Xbox? And it was you guys, Gamertag Radio. It was a name that you always heard. It would always make your ear perk up when you heard it. That was kind of how I found out, because I heard about it. But I never knew who was the voices behind the podcast. And I don't think I actually figured that out until a friend of mine, Yamilia Avendano, introduced me to you. And then that's when I was like, you're the guy, the voice that I've been hearing all this time. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the official exposure
to it. That's cool. So let's go back during your time when you first started in the industry, man. How was it for you back then, man? just getting into the industry, I know it was super tough for everybody.
It's volatile.
You know, especially like people of color, especially like for us, it's hard to get our name out there, man. You know, I had to like, I felt like I had to work twice as hard.
Yeah.
Or even sometimes even more,
bro,
just to get that attention, you know? So how was it for you, man?
Like, it was hard mode, you know, like everybody else, you know, we're playing with that difficulty level a little higher, but it was a grind, but one of those type of grinds that you can appreciate because you're learning so much along the way. It really started with me. I used to play Rainbow Six Vegas professionally. I was joining these online tournaments with my friends, and we were winning like lots of money. Showed up at some live tournaments, and it was working out very well, but I was also a big trash talker. And so I think I like upset the community to a certain extent to where I needed to like get away from it. And plus, it wasn't really lucrative to be a pro gamer 10 years ago. It was not the way you went. Like in 2008, nobody playing games professionally was just kind of like, you're either like the guys like Justin Wong who, you know, are getting all the invitational invites, or yours, you know, if you're just like a lowly player, it's tough. But anyway, I got away from that and started a YouTube channel themed around the Rainbow Six community. And it slowly turned into me talking from me talking about Rainbow Six to me talking about games, period. So I'm talking about all the video games now and commenting on the game industry. And it was around the time PS3 came out, and PS3 was getting a lot of hate. So I was like one of the guys who was like, well, PS3 is not that bad. Yeah, it's expensive, but look at the first party titles. Check out Heavenly Sword. Like, yada, yada, yada. I was like defending it. And so people from YouTube like enjoyed that and started watching. And next thing I know, like people were coming to me for my opinion on video games. And so I'm like, how could I take this like a step further? How could I make this like lucrative? So I'm looking around, as I always did, at the other landscape. People who are in the landscape, I'm seeing folks like DLB, folks like you, and I was like, well, maybe I should start like a blog. So I started writing, and I created a blog called the Iron Star Movement. That's where I met Yamelia. She came on as a writer, had tons of like other friends who were writing, and I remember in 2008, I wanted to go to E3 very badly, but we had just started the website, and I'm like, I don't have like the credentials to go. I hit up Susan Kramer, who she works for Double Forte, and Double Forte is kind of the company that handles all the invitations to E3. I'm sure you've come across them.
Yeah.
And I hit her up and I'm like, yo, I'm just a nobody who's trying to make it. It would be a dream come true if I could get a couple badges to go to E3. My site's new, but we're just looking for a way in. And she was like, you know what? Sure. And she gave me and three of my other friends badges. So we show up to E3. We're in our suits. We're going to our appointments, sitting down with anybody.
With suits, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, we're in suits. But we're sitting down with anybody. We don't care what you had. You could be showing off, you know, a controller that's not ergonomically, you know, intelligent. But we'll sit down and we'll mess around with it. But yeah, that's how it all started, man. And I think after that first E3, I left that event. And I'm like, I want to do this. I'm going to keep showing up at these events. I don't care until I can find myself a job or a way in. And so our blog actually picked up because people, you know, gave us a little bit of credit for making it to E3. We got some credibility. And, yeah, just kept doing that indie grind for some years.
You know what? She also helped us out, too.
Oh, Susan Kramer?
Yeah. She got us passes, too. I met her years later.
Oh, okay.
But she helped us out in the past because there was a time that it was getting harder and harder to get passes at E3.
Yeah.
And I've been going to since 2005. But there was a time that instead of checking our download numbers, they would just check the site. And I think the ESA. And to me, I feel like they didn't really understand like the process of like podcasts. Like people will just go to the app and just download the podcast. They don't need to go to the site. Yeah.
So you guys were early in that game. You guys were early in the podcast.
Yeah. So when they were just checking our stats of the website using some third-party application, I think it's called Compete.com.
Oh, yeah. I remember Compete. There was Alexa and Compete.
Yeah, Alexa and Compete. And they would check our site. I'm like, yeah, our site is down, but I could show our numbers what we have. Like, we have a lot of listeners worldwide that doesn't even bother to visit the site. All they do is just listen to our show.
Word.
So what about that? I'll send them screenshots of the podcast. Mm-hmm. So So it was a struggle for me. Now for you, now after getting that pass from Susan, you were getting passes every year after that, or?
Every year.
Yeah?
Yeah, because after that first year, we gained a little bit of credibility, and so we started syndicating like any other gaming website, you know, and it got to the point where we were trying to like scoop. We were trying to get like Kotaku and like beat people to the punchline. We had met game developers there. And another thing we wanted to do is we wanted to, you know, our coverage to always have like its own like identity and its own attitude. So like we were very like, it was very hip hop oriented, you know?
Same with us.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, that was kind of our niche, you know? It was like, you know, we are the, we're basically going to be the hip hop slash gaming
website.
Website. You know?
So it was then you guys. It was us. There was Console Kings.
Console Kings. Yep.
Hip hop gamer.
Hip hop gamer. You had the Coalition.
Coalition. That's
you had Games on Smash.
Games on
you
Smash.
You had the Bitbag. Yeah. Shouts out to Torrance Davis. He's a you know one of those figures that I looked up to my entire career. So
yeah, shout out to him. Yeah.
Yeah. There was all those.
Yeah.
All those. Yeah.
Yeah. It's good that you mentioned that because when I started, I remember releasing the first episode. People will call us ghetto and hood and, oh, you guys are acting tough. I'm like, we're not. That's our slang. That's how
who we are. Yeah.
So it was difficult for us to get, I felt like, to get accepted from the gaming community.
Mm-hmm.
So how was it for you guys? Especially known as a hip-hop gaming website. Because as soon as people hear hip-hop, like, oh, hoodlums.
Yeah.
You know what I'm
hoodlums.
Saying?
Hoodlums. Yeah.
So.
It was you know, when we first started, it wasn't that bad.
Okay. So it was more accepted then. Like it was more accepted.
I don't know what it was about our approach that made people accept us, but we were doing some wild stuff, bro. Like we made Uncharted raps.
That's dope.
Yeah. We basically made like, we took Uncharted and went into the cinema mode and made like full music videos. And like Naughty Dog was inviting us to our studio because they saw this. Like they were accepting and embracing it. So I don't know.
That's cool.
I don't know what it was about our approach that was different. It seems like it's more volatile now to navigate than it was then.
Yeah.
Yeah, we really didn't run into that much. There were a couple of times where I went to like events and I was like waiting in line for my appointment. And they'd be like, oh, what's up, hip hop gamer? And I'm like, that's not me.
Yeah.
I'm totally not me. Yeah. You know? They got us confused a few times. But yeah, for the most part, people were very accepting. And, you know, I think it was just because like the quality of our work, you know, we really didn't ride that whole like, yo, we're hip hop. Like we just kind of like let our work speak in like the substance of our reviews and the substance of our content kind of speak for itself above just like the bravado. And I think the bravado was kind of just something that came after, and then people were like, oh, I kind of liked it. And another thing, too, is I noticed with our fan base, like a lot of these guys who were like big, dedicated fans have become friends of mine, but there were a lot of people who were from our community, you know, who they didn't see people like us doing it. So they're like, why would I go to an IGN or one of these other websites where I can go to this place where there are people who are actually like me, who speak my language, use my slang? And so that's kind of where I think, you know, things started to really help us, you know, when we started reaching people from our community. And
so how was the process from your own personal website and then going to Nerdist? Because there was a time you were still a journalist at that time.
Yeah.
Why the change? You know, what happened during that time for you?
Yeah, for me, there were a couple things going on in my personal life that kind of led to that decision. I was working in the music industry as well. As a producer and a songwriter, and I just had a bad falling out with one of the artists I was writing with. So after that, you know, running my website, I never really made like a living off of it. It was always a passion project, you know. Made some decent money off of it, but it was always a passion project. I always was working on the side. Mm-hmm. And so when Chris Hardwick from Nerdist, you know, came up to me and basically was like, yo, I want to offer you a job. I want you to build a game vertical, kind of like what you did on my website, and you can live in LA and I'm gonna give you a salary. I was like, well, this is an opportunity to do more. But with that came a whole different audience, a bigger audience. So the exposure was great, but it wasn't like that small niche group of people who were like watching us before.
Mm-hmm.
And it was tough, man, to be completely honest with you. It was tough because like the methods that I used before no longer could work. You know, people were kind of like, I don't understand this slang. I don't understand these references. So a little bit of code switching necessary to make it work.
Was there a time for you that you wanted to quit?
Yes.
You're like, you know what? This industry is not for me.
Yes.
What was that? And was there someone or there was something that changed your mind? Like, you know what? I'm not going to stop. I'm going to keep on going.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think I always landed on, you know, my gratitude point, which is I'm writing about video games. I am grateful for this job. So I always landed there and I would get over all that stuff. But I think it was, you know, when I was working at Nerdist and I would read some of the comments of people going like, this dude doesn't deserve his job. Yada, who is this guy?
You think it was hate? It was just hate? Or maybe there was mistakes that you made? Or?
I think there was definitely some hate. Some people were like, why does this guy have this spot? I should be there. I think there's with gamers, there's like this, there's this entitlement with a lot of folks where they feel like they can just do it better, I guess, you know? They don't really see the other perspective. They don't know what goes into making the end result, their end product. They just think they can do it better. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of it, too, was just the fact that, like, you know, there aren't many folks of color doing these things or folks from our culture doing these things. So it was very off-putting to a lot of the viewers and the audience. And for that reason, they automatically rebuked it. They don't like the change. They're afraid of change. They're afraid they don't want to. Their ear trained on some other culture. They would much rather be used to what they're comfortable with. And so that was a bit of a struggle for me. And, you know, I didn't feel very validated most of the time I was a Nerdist. You know, I was there for 3 years. And like when I left there, I didn't feel like, man, I really like, you know, I really killed it when I was at this job because I felt like I wasn't connecting the way I should have. It wasn't until after I left and I was talking to a lot of people who read Nerdist. And I was seeing, like, comments of people asking, like, where Malik go? That I realized, like, no, I actually did make an impact while I was there. I actually did help them build this vertical and make gaming, like, something that they took seriously at Nerdist. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, while I was there, man, there was so many times where I was like, why am I doing this? Like,
so my question to you is, you used to be a journalist, and now you're a host. So yeah. How, for esports especially, so
right.
What made you decide to stop doing journalism and now be more involved with esports, because that's a whole new industry. I mean, that industry been going on for a very long time. When I started, it was MOG, Halo 2, a little bit of Call of Duty, some Smash,
yeah.
Early GameCube days, the first original Xbox. But now it's gotten more mainstream.
Oh, yeah.
So during that time, I felt like when I met you, I was like, man, I see he's making some changes, man. Like,
yeah.
He's going for it because esports is going to get even more mainstream. So let's talk about that. Like, how was the process from journalists
to esports?
To esports, yeah.
Yeah. Well, first off, the reason why I kind of got out of journalism, I did see the landscape changing. I was talking to a lot of my buddies. And I feel like I had achieved a lot as a game journalist. I got to judge E3. I had like lots of quotes taken out of my reviews that were like featured on game packaging. I feel like I had accomplished like the things that I wanted, but I realized people weren't really reading my reviews to read my reviews. They were reading for the scores, and they were reading. So then I stopped putting scores on them. The traffic started declining, and I couldn't really justify like the work that I was putting in. Being in the Nerdist family, though, it was created by a host. Chris Hartwigs is like he's a host. One of the best that I ever do hosting. And a lot of his methods were passed down. So I was like, I want to see where I can go. It's a new challenge. And esports is kind of how this whole thing started for me, competitive gaming. So I felt like the first thing I did was I started looking at all the other esports establishments and what everybody was doing. And the one thing I felt was missing was the competitor aspect, the competitor giving their insight. And so I was like, well, I'm somebody who used to compete. Maybe I can relate to a lot of the players and them playing. Maybe I can give their perspective a little more if I go into this. And that's kind of what led me to initially jumping into the esports scan. And again, the landscape was changing. I tried to do podcasting as well when I left game journalism. I had a podcast that lasted about a year. Now,
yeah, it's not easy,
it's
man.
Not easy.
It's not easy.
I was like, man, how do they do it, man? Yeah. How does Danny get this done, man?
Yeah.
That was kind of what it was, man. And that was the cool transition right there.
You know what stood out to me? Last year, I had to be in New York for a film festival because my movie got selected there.
Yeah.
So during that week, Overwatch League was there too.
Oh, wow, it was the finals.
Yes. They invited me. I couldn't go because I had to be at the
festival.
Film festival. But I remember going on Twitter and see, I think it was you that tweeted this. It was you coming out.
Oh, the intro.
The intro.
Yeah.
And the crowd was going crazy. That had to be like a very special moment for you, man. Because
I've never been so nervous in my life.
But the stuff that you were going through at the early days and to that moment,
yeah,
it had to be like something crazy special to you, right?
Yeah, man. It was a moment that I can recall very vividly because there were so many emotions going through my head, through my entire soul at that moment. Because I was thinking about that. I was thinking about my career from, like, how did I get here, you know? Even before that, thinking about my mom sitting in the video games in front of me, like, video games truly were a way to keep me safe for my mother. And so thinking about, like, her doing that and to me being there and making a career out of it and thinking about, like, just the whole landscape of video games, where we're going and, you know, it being a spectator sport and the passion of everybody around me involved in video games, all culminating to that moment for me. It was huge.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I nailed it because honestly, like, when I was walking, I was talking, but what was going through my head was not exactly what I was saying. There was a million other things going through my head.
Were you freestyling that or you were actually?
No, that was freestyle. There was no script, no prompter,
yeah,
no nothing. So,
yeah. But see, that's when you know that it's real, man. Like, there was a part when I had to go on stage and I got an award and all that stuff. I had a whole script, right?
Yeah.
I completely skipped that. And I was just saying things that was coming out of the moment. And at the end, like, I cried, right?
Yeah.
And everybody at the event was like, Danny, that was the realest speech during the whole awards.
Right.
So your moment stood out to me. And I honestly didn't know that it was freestyle. I thought it was scripted.
Oh, no, not at all.
But it felt, but either way, it felt real. Like,
right.
You know what I'm saying? So sometimes going freestyle like that, yeah, at the moment is sometimes, yeah, even better than scripted, man.
Yeah.
You know?
And it was risky because, like, we talked about it earlier, but the thing I always am mindful of, especially since now with Overwatch League, we're on Disney, we're on ESPN, is, you know, it's necessary for me to code switch now because there's little kids watching. Our culture sometimes can be very brash. And so the biggest challenge in my job is making sure I can keep it clean and not so too brash and not too code it to where, like, people don't understand our slang or left out. You know, I want everybody to be welcome. So in that moment to freestyle, I had to keep all that stuff in my mind. Like, okay,
Don't say that.
Yeah.
And it's funny because in the beginning of our interview, you were saying that you used to talk trash online.
Yeah. It's a complete switch, bro.
And look, from that to this.
Yeah.
It's insane. Insane, yeah, man. But yeah, like, how hard was it for you to make that change, man? Like, just overall, because we grew up in, you know, hip hop culture, and sometimes it's hard to explain to people.
It is.
Like, our slang and when we're talking with our peeps, like friends, and,
yeah,
you know, especially with music.
Yeah.
So for you, like, now that you were, you know, have Overwatch League on Disney and all that, like, how was the process for you to actually completely change, man? Because now that you have a younger audience, you don't want them to learn or say things in a that's, yeah, just going to look bad, you know,
right,
overall.
Right.
So,
yeah, you know, it's a balance because it's at the same time, you don't want to be disingenuous. You want to still be yourself. And for me, it's been honestly the toughest thing, like, in my career has been to basically make sure I'm still me, but I'm not, like, brash. Because it's been, like you said, it's been such a part of my culture. There's certain words that I use on a normal basis that, like, an international audience would never understand. So I got to be mindful of that. And I think now I'm in a good place to where, like, if there's something in the teleprompter, I'll see what it says, and I'm like, all right, but I'm going to say it the way I'm going to say it. But I'm still able to put it in a way that's, like, not offensive or not brash. And, mm-hmm, yeah, honestly, that's been the most difficult thing for me. But I think now I've learned. I've got a good grip on it. And I just hope to continue to get better because, like, hosting, this isn't my number one talent. My number one talent is music.
Music.
And
so I can see you one day, the Grammys or something, like something big like that.
We're going,
right,
for,
like,
an EGOT, baby.
Yeah, yeah.
John Legend, I'm coming, bro. Another, yeah, Ohio boy coming behind you.
You know what? I love that you remind me a lot of, like, me when I was doing the whole music thing, when I was younger, all that. Because we have a lot of talent, man.
a lot of talent. And sometimes when things doesn't work, just change it up and do something else until you find that right thing for you, man. Like, right. you change. Like me, I changed so many times. I wanted to, when I was a little kid, I wanted to be a game developer.
Right.
This is like during the 80s and 90s. Didn't work out. Then I wanted to do like stuff with TV. It was successful here and there, but it still, like, it wasn't for me until I found like my path, like involved with music, then podcasting. Podcasting changed my life completely, man. You know, so for you, it's more music that inspires you to do this even more, like more than hosting and journalism and all that stuff.
It's just what speaks to my soul the most. I got a musical family. You know, everyone in my family plays something or has some type of songwriting or creative like outlet.
Yeah.
And so, and I went to a performing arts school growing up. So, like, it's just part of my soul. And
you're super talented, man.
Yeah, man. But one thing I did learn is if the game has options, then you can always switch your settings. And so I try to keep it moving. Like, whatever is challenging me the most is what I try to.
Do you see yourself, like, creating a music for a game? Or for a movie or something like that? Yeah. Do you see yourself doing that too or no?
Well, as far as creating music for a game, it's actually something that I'm kind of into right now. I want to talk more about it.
No, that's all good.
It's so like preliminary right now. So I've been sending some music back and forth with a reputable developer, and it's been going pretty well. So we'll see where it goes.
Wish him luck.
Yeah, and I think ultimately for me, man, like I just want to. I want to do something that pretty much inspires people from our culture to get into the game and become like Hideo Kojima. I want to see somebody from our culture who is regarded as like a Hideo Kojima or regarded on the same level as a Tim Schafer or something, someone of that ilk, you know? Mm-hmm. And the brain power and the inspiration and the motivation is out there. It's just a matter of, you know, those people getting the opportunity. So.
Like earlier, I know you mentioned a couple of people that inspired you to do this, right?
Yeah.
Especially with journalism when you first started, right?
A lot of my peers, not like you.
And so I see a lot of the young generation that in the future they're probably gonna mention your name, man, because they see you your process, man, like from being a journalist to the host and all that, you know, like. I can see people mention your name in the future, man. Like, yo, Malik inspired me to do this, to do that, man. Like, what advice would you tell them for people that are, like, they're so new into this? Like, they don't know what to do, where to go.
Right.
What is, like, the best advice you could give them, man?
I mean, the best advice I always give everybody is stick to your guns and shoot for the stars, for the simple fact that no matter who you are, your story and your trajectory is always going to be different than the next man's. Mm-hmm. And so if you're worried about what the next man's doing, it's going to really stunt your growth and it's going to stunt what you're doing. So you got to stick to your guns. You got to do what's best for you and do what's comfortable and natural to you. Let me rephrase comfortable, because I do feel like living out your comfort zone is a good idea. And like going into new settings is definitely a thing. But for me, the tenacity is what worked for me. From that first E3 and emailing Susan to like
wearing suits
to E3, doing the most, being the most extra, to just like showing up at events on my own dollar when I really shouldn't be spending the money, but I had no kids or no dependents, so I'm like, yo, if I have to like sleep on someone's hotel floor, I'm going to this event, you know. That type of like tenacity is ultimately what led to me being here. And so as long as folks knows, like, you know, some people have an easy road, but most of the time it's not going to be easy. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be overnight. I could have tried this hard and still not have reached this goal, you know. But at the end of the day, it was like the passion that drove me. And if you let your passion and your heart, you know, drive you, at the end of the day, you're going to be validated. You're going to feel good about what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And you're going to accomplish gratitude and happiness, which ultimately should be the goal.
Yeah. My last question, do you know of any up and coming journalists or hosts that we should be on the lookout, man? Because it's good to know like, you know, some up and coming people that are trying their best and they're not getting that love, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, there's a ton. Like I mean, I look at the Smash community, all those guys like the D1 and TK, who's actually not
They're around here somewhere.
We're sitting. They're around here somewhere. Yeah.
I would like to meet them. I never met them.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I'll introduce you. But like, Bam, all those guys from the Smash community, they're all young, but like, they're doing, they've actually been at it for a while within that community. They're doing really well for themselves. More on the East, like, I guess, traditional esports side, you have folks like Tasty Steve, who's been doing his thing. I look at a lot of the players also who are kind of making transitions. You have like the Smugs, the Punks, the guys from the FGC who are great. Zerk, a lot of folks who used to do journalism like Broken Games HD, who hosts the Weapon Wheel podcast. You have Jeremy, also known as the Gamer 2323. I look at all of them as like kind of like dudes who in no time flat will be working in the industry at, you know, the same capacity as you and I. We'll see them at events and whatnot. And man, like, to think of them off the top of my head is really tough because there's so many.
Nah, it's all good. It's all good.
But those guys all stand out, and I think that there's there's a lot of there's Mika Burton. I don't know why I didn't mention her because she works with me at Overwatch League now.
Okay.
And before that though, I was always a big admirer of hers. Like, I always thought, and she's young. She's 24, I believe, and to see her kind of start really grassroots and to where she is now, like working as a reporter for Overwatch League, has been awesome. And I think the sky's the limit for her.
Yeah. So,
plenty more names I can.
Yeah, it's so many.
But those are a few that come to mind.
What do you see yourself doing in 10 years from now?
10 years? Don't know, man. The trajectory changes.
Do you see more music focus? Do you see that, or
more music focus? Definitely.
Or are you still doing the same esports thing? Because esports, I feel like, is growing even more. So
yeah, I'm still going to be involved in esports in some capacity. I don't know how much longer I'm going to be a host. To be honest,
why you say that?
I'm 33, and you know, I just think about my shelf life in this industry. I mean, don't get me wrong. In sports, there's a lot of older commentators, right? You have like dudes who are in their 60s and 70s who are still commentating. But for me, I do think about moving out of the way and giving other folks opportunities.
Pass the torch.
Yeah, passing the torch. That's, you know, something that I think about pretty often. And not only that, but I think that my mind is better utilized from a more production standpoint. I've learned the bits that I produce have come out very well. So I do want to get behind the camera and produce a little more. So I think that's ultimately where I will end up being.
I could see that.
More of a production role.
Yeah.
And working in music. But ultimately, my ultimate goal is just to fuse the worlds, man. I want hip hop culture to get the same respect in gaming because we don't get respect, bro.
At all.
We don't get respect.
Why do you think even after all these years we're not getting that respect though? Like, what is it that we us as a community, what is it that we need to do to earn that respect?
Gross negligence. It's gross negligence, man. Like, I don't understand why, especially when you have games like Fortnite, taking dances from our community and putting them in their game.
Yeah.
They don't have us mo-capping them, though. So they're done completely horribly, one. And two, like, there's no back and forth. There's no exchange. I'm a big supporter of cultural exchange. I feel like if you ever take from a culture, you need to give back to that culture. So, like, if you're taking dances from Harlem and putting them in your game, you should be hiring people from that community to work on your game. Especially when you're expanding your team 3-4 times and you're making all this money off of that one emote. So,
like, at least give back to the community, right?
At least give back. At least do a job fair in New York.
Do you think it's a way for us to educate all these gaming companies for them to, like, you know what? We should do that. But the thing is, I feel having conversation with people, like, in different industry overall, there's a lot of things that's like super messed up and negative.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know, like, I feel getting more people involved, like, from our side, getting involved with different industry, we can make that change, man. But
you're right.
It's kind of hard, man.
It's tough.
When companies are already so used to that.
You're right, man. To be honest, we should have started early. We should have started, like, you know, this could have been a conversation me and you had when I first met you, you know. I think during the time, though, when me and you were coming up, there were a lot of people who were just competing. So, like, I would look over at Javen's game show. Javen's a good friend of mine now, but at the time, he was, like, a competitor of mine. So I'm like, I'm getting in before you, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of the wrong mindset to have. You know, we're all we have. So now we're in a position where, like, yeah, there's a few of us who kind of have sustained ourselves, but everyone else is doing other things. And now there's not a collective group of people to defend our culture. And so I think now we're at a point where, as this new crop, this youth is coming in, they need to be the ones to kind of take the reins on that. And we're just kind of the voices, like, telling them what they should be watching out for, because a lot of that stuff will go right over their heads otherwise. They're just doing their jobs, you know? Yeah. But things like the Fortnite thing, a lot of people weren't paying attention to that.
At all. And honestly, it was an article. Like, at the moment, I wasn't thinking about it until I read an article and I seen tweets from different people.
Yeah.
But I feel like, in a way, it's our fault for not paying attention and waiting until the game got even super mainstream, you know? And another thing that relates to this is I was talking to Status Selecta,
okay,
a hip hop producer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He worked with a bunch of artists. So I was talking to him and I asked him, like, "Oh, how was your experience getting your music, Grand Theft Auto 4?" He was like, "Danny, I loved it. It was a great experience, but here's the bad thing about it."
He didn't get residuals?
No royalties, man.
What?
That game sold millions and millions and millions of copies, right? I just got that check for that song in there. I didn't get no royalties. When you compare movies to games, movies, everybody get a royalty check.
Yeah.
Streaming, or when people buy the DVDs or something, they'll get royalties checks. Yeah. From the gaming side, zero. Voice actors not getting that at all. I could compare this. This is even worse than music artists not getting royalty checks on, like, Spotify, like, streaming services. Because they get nothing through there. But imagine now with gaming. Even worse. They're getting zero, man.
Yeah.
So I feel like us, that we're part of the industry, we can make that change, man.
I agree with you.
You know?
That's right there. It's kind of like, you know, to end that last question you asked me about, like, what the 10-year plan is, I want to make sure that, like, that stuff is completely taken care of and we have crossed the streams and the thresholds to where there doesn't feel like there's so much appropriation, you know? And it's not so much appropriation as it is co-opting, which means there are two parties working together to make things happen. Because video games are beautiful. It's a beautiful way to exchange culture. I was genuinely happy when I saw little kids flossing and little kids milli rocking and little kids, you know, doing the shoot dance, which is from Memphis, you know. That stuff is cool that, you know, these kids are getting that exposure. But at the same time, like, the guys who make those dances should be compensated or included in some way, shape, or form. The communities need to get payback. So, yeah, it starts with us, man. And hopefully us even talking about this here on this podcast, you know, can put a bug in a couple people's ears.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely, man. Yeah. Oh, Malik, man, thanks. Thanks for the conversation. Really good conversation, man.
Yeah,
you
man.
Know what I'm saying? Like, that's the difference between podcasts and just streaming and all that stuff. Like, I feel we could just have a dope conversation, man. Good vibes.
Good vibes, man.
Yeah, I love definitely, it, man. It was cool. Thanks
I love
for
it, especially having been watching your journey to this moment. It's been awesome. So,
thanks a lot, man. For Thank sure. You. All right, cool.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
All right, so we're back here at Gamertag Radio. Shout out to Malik. Thank you so much, man. It was a great time sitting down with you and recording this interview. And I hope you, the listener, hope you learned some stuff from our conversation. And please let us know what you think. You know, hit me up on Twitter, or also you could hit us up on any social media. Just look up Gamertag Radio. Give us a call, 76-2737-GTR, or email us fanmail@gamertagradio.com. All right, until next time, the next episode, we're definitely going to be talking about Borderlands 3. The review just happened today. So I'm definitely going to sit down with Pete in Paris, and we're going to have a full episode, everything about Borderlands 3. Stay tuned here at Gamertag Radio. Until next time, take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Stay
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.